Mother Earth dons her most beautiful gown. And if you've observed the moon for the past few nights, like last night it rose saffron, and then it turned, not last night, the night before, it rose saffron and then gradually transformed into gold. And last night it was white, just like Shishirada and Navachandra. Normally, Krishna is Shyam. And when Sri Shivada Vandana Chandra arrived here, and the devotees asked Sri Prabhupada, why is Krishna white? He said that sometimes when Srimati Radharani touches him, he becomes white. So tonight, beginning with Krishna calling the gopis by the song of his flute, which is the love of his heart transformed in vibration. You know, everything in creation is vibration. Some energies are vibrating at slower levels than you can see them. But everything is vibration, frequency, which also carries information. So the song of his flute, each of the billions of gopis heard a personal invitation to her, as if calling her by name. It's not like a concert where everybody's hearing the same thing. Everyone is hearing something very unique, special, and personal. And then Srila Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book, whatever they were doing, milking cows, feeding their babies, serving their families, they left bacon, they just left everything and ran, dressed in the most ludicrous manner, with their blouses in place of their skirts, and their skirts in place of their blouses, makeup and mascara on one eye and out on the other, just oblivious there in the external, because internally Krishna was calling. So, now, bear in mind what this means. These are young girls. Some married, some not. And in the very conservative society of Braj, for them to run off into the forest in the middle of the night and dance with a sylvan prince, they wouldn't be allowed back into their homes. They would have been banished, not only from their homes, from their villages. They would have to live as outcasts. And they didn't know that they were all being called. They didn't know they'd have any association. That's a very painful condition, being an outcast. You're no support. They didn't consider their own well-being while they knew he's the Krishna's calling and were answering for his pleasure. So, when they met Krishna, he asked, why have you come? What do you mean, why have you come? Because you called us. He said, have you come to see the beauty of the forest in the full night, in the full moonlight? Okay, well, now you've seen, you can go home. Because it's very dangerous here. Ferocious animals are roaming in the jungle. But they were not to be discouraged. Oh, and they said, you know, it's really not right. You cultured ladies come to meet a boy like me. So better go home. What I would like to emphasize is a certain part of the discussion. They met for the rasa dance. Krishna left the gopis. He just vanished. They searched everywhere for him. And it was not until they were all united in a common mood. Because everyone had their own agenda, so to speak. It was all to please Krishna, but it was in their own way. And for Rasa Lila to progress, Krishna wanted that everyone be united in a common mood. And that common mood was the shared anguish of his separation when he disappeared from their midst. What I would like to emphasize is the conversation which ensued after Krishna reappeared in response to their and they're kind of chastising him in a somewhat concealed way. So they asked him, some people, they're asking him about the nature of different kinds of loving reciprocation, loving exchange. So they're asking about different categories, trying to decipher which one Krishna falls into. Some people reciprocate with affection only towards those who are affectionate with them. Others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. And still others do not show affection to anyone. Dear Krishna, please explain this to us. And Lord Krishna says, so-called friends who show affection for each other just to benefit themselves are actually selfish, like merchants. They have no true friendship, nor are they following actual principles of religion. And if they didn't expect some benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. Others are genuinely merciful, or like parents, naturally affectionate. And they will continue to devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate. With them, they are the true followers of religion, and they are the true well-wishers. Then there's the other category, who are spiritualists. These are the ones that don't show reciprocation for several different possible reasons. could be because they're on their own, spiritually self-satisfied, or just so materially fulfilled that they're indifferent, or it could be because they're ungrateful or envious towards superiors. Such persons will not show love even towards those who love them, what to speak of those who are indifferent or inimical. And then Krishna revealed the reason why he sometimes appears not to reciprocate with those who worship him to the extent of sacrificing everything for his pleasure. And then what does he do? He questions them. He vanishes from them. And then he explains, the reason I did not immediately reciprocate with the affection of those who worship me is because I want to intensify a loving devotion. So you see, this is a kind of reciprocation. It doesn't always feel like that. The experience may come later. And he explains, I do this so that they don't take me for granted. Now you can apply that same principle to the holy name. Sometimes we wonder why we're not feeling reciprocation from Krishna's holy name. Of course, the first thing we should consider, examining our heart, is it due to material desires or offenses? If you can hopefully rule out those possibilities, could it be the third, that this is Krishna's reciprocation by protecting us from taking the holy name for granted and increasing our yearning? And he gave the analogy, like a poor man who suddenly somehow inherits a great fortune, and then he loses it all. And he can't think about anything else. Receiving Krishna's holy name is the supreme fortune. And the supreme misfortune, stated by Mahaprabhu and Shikshastakam, is to take that holy name for granted. Or, as he says in his own words, Krishna, you have bestowed such a priceless treasure upon me in the form of your holy name. I am so unfortunate. I have no attachment for it. Meaning, I've taken it for granted. So after that series of events and questions and answers, when everyone is united in a common mood, then the Rasa Lila begun. Of course, it happened every night, but tonight is one of the most special of all, for a number of reasons. Of course, we want to emphasize Shiva Purnima, marking the beginning of Kartik Mas. Kartik is a name for the daughter of Kirtita Sundari, who is Kartika Kumari. gentle, tender-hearted, the tender-hearted daughter of Kirtita, Srimati Radharani, who is the presiding goddess of Damodar's heart. Therefore, the month is sometimes referred to as Kartik, sometimes Damodar, sometimes Kartik Damodar. It is the month which is especially blessed by the grace of Srimati Radharani, who is the ultimate origin and bestower of all spiritual love, the Divine Mother of all souls, whose month is filled with a series of most luminous leelas highlighting the nature of Krishna's sweet loving reciprocation with his devotees. The rising Shravat Purnima moon inspired Krishna to reciprocate with the gopis' desire, which was also maxing with the rising moon, their desire to please him. And then he called them. He wanted to reciprocate with their desire to give everything, body, mind, heart, words, everything, exclusively, in his service, free of all distractions. Natanam Najanam Sundaram Kavitam Bhajagadishitamaya. Mahaprabhu, describing a proper mood for chanting without distraction. Natanam, not desires of wealth. Natanam, high birth, culture. Sundaram, beautiful ladies or men, depending on gender. This is the consciousness of the gopis. Yetamam prabhadyante tamasthitayam bhajamyam. Krishna in the heart of everyone is aware of their intentions and he reciprocates accordingly. So he called the gopis. And to dance with him is such an inconceivable great fortune that it actually made them more humble. This is what happens to pure souls when they receive some special benediction. It makes them more humble. And yet, they display the mere semblance of pride. Because, you know, when Matajis act too detached, you might wonder if they're just being indifferent. So they acted like they were proud of their great fortune. And at times they're even acting like they're envious of one another. It's not envy at all. It's their appreciation of others who have greater fortune. But to show Krishna their feelings, it sometimes appears to be pride or envy. It's not that at all. It's an expression of deep humility in a way that pleases Krishna. So first, in the circle of the Rasa Lila, every gopi was thinking that she's with Krishna, because Krishna expanded into as many forms as there were gopis to be a desire of every gopi. in a circle consisting of billions of gopis, dancing alone with Srimati Radharani in the center. The stellar system offers a reflection of this phenomenon. In the center is the sun, orbited by its various planets and their moons and their satellites. Everything held by the centrifugal force towards the center, which is Krishna, like the sun. And it doesn't all merge because of the centrifugal force of the unfolding of a dynamic creation. So, Srimati Radharani knew that Krishna wanted to be alone with her. So, he took her away. And the gopis were... As soon as she left the scene, all the ecstasy vanished. And the gopis were searching, following Krishna's footprints, and they saw that there was another smaller set of footprints with his. And that's where the Anayayadam verse was spoken by Lalita Devi. Certainly that gopi has pleased him the most, because he took her away. And then they saw two sets of footprints, and then the larger footprints became only half a footprint. So look, now he's standing on his toes to pick flowers for her. Then there was only one set of footprints, well now he's carrying her. And they're acting like they're jealous, but they're really in ecstasy, seeing the evidence of her great good fortune. Till they found her alone, because he left her. And that's when everyone was really united in a common mood. Mood of separation from Krishna. And that's where Rasa really began. Kartik Mas is a time to focus, absorb our hearts especially in Braj Lila, especially in chanting the holy name. Minimize physical demands, unnecessary services, those things we really like to do, but we dovetail it in Krishna's service, Krishnaizing something that's not directly bhakti. It's a time to minimize those borderline services and really focus and absorb ourselves in direct service, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Bhada, Sayanam, Archanam, Madhanam, Dasyam, Satyam, Avandivedam. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's amongst the prime duty of Vaishnavas to observe Kartik. With urja vrat, meaning a vow, specifically, I mean, there's certain things that are essential, rise early, mangal arti, damodar ashtakam, tulsi puja, sukha mangale, tulsi devi. Focus on hearing braj leelas and certain shastras which really highlight Brajalila, Krishna Bhakti, like Upadeshamrita is nice because it begins with everything you should give up. And then 11 verses takes you to the highest. Shushastakam. And if you make a vow of Vrat and express that in the morning, Krishna, this is what I'm going to do for you this month. And make it reasonable, because you don't want to vow to Krishna, who's the embodiment of truth, and then not fulfill your vow. Something reasonable. And why is this so important? Urja Vrat means a vow to Urjeshwar. Srimati Radharani, who is the queen of all potencies, who gives strength to succeed in the fulfillment of our vrat and receive the bountiful harvest of spiritual blessings at the conclusion of this month. This is a month when the slightest spiritual efforts produce the most bountiful rewards, because it's Srimati Radharani's month. Now we call it the month of Damodar, but the queen of his heart is Radha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that of months when Magashri, the following month, that's the month that Kumaris worship Katyayani to receive Krishna as their, like a lover, like a husband. So he says, I am that month that Srimati Radharani is now most danya in her Kumaris. Preceding month of Damodar is most dear to Krishna. And there's so many fruitive enticements given in scripture for following vows, sins of this month. The only goal they desire is the pleasure of Kartik Damodar, his service to their servants, not any fruitive enticements. And when we honor Kartik, Krishna is most pleased. If we neglect her, Krishna will neglect or disregard us. As Ekadasi is that time of month to increase our hearing and chanting, Kartik is the month of the year to do the same. And Urja Vrat, queen of all energies, she will energize your devotional service. If you follow this month seriously, you will come out spiritually rejuvenated at the end. And this most enchanting ceremony of offering maps to Yashoda Damodar. Now, how do you explain that it's highly symbolic without taking it to be symbolic only? The absolute truth is most rich in symbology. which the lamp means welcoming a guest, brightening someone's way, expressing our burning hearts, or at least the desire that they burn in devotional love. And the luster of these lamps that we offer, like everything in this month, is eternal. It has a cumulative effect. And at the end of life, that cumulative luster will reveal and brighten our path back to home. The heart is a lotus. It blossoms in the light of higher sentiments and closes in the darkness of lower ones. You can experience this quite readily when you're feeling overshadowed with emotions like shame, toxic guilt, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, envy, selfishness. It's evident that your heart is closed. When you're feeling love, compassion, gratitude, it's clear your heart is open. And there's no such catalyst to open the heart to higher states of consciousness than either practicing or cultivating a heart of gratitude. Why do we keep mentioning this? Because it's most appropriate for the month when grace abounds. Proper response to grace is gratitude. Srila Prabhupada emphasized that point in a most unconventional darshan here in New Vrindavan. And in the possible internal dialogues, each of which reveals something precious that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura reveals in Rama's conversation with Krishna when he came to beg forgiveness after stealing the cows and cowherd boys, Krishna revealed the nature of his gratitude. Which integrates with our own feelings of gratitude to transcend time and space and draw future eventualities into the present experience. Now this is important when you're trying to visualize a goal that you have not yet achieved. We're trying to visualize what is the life of eternity now to bliss? And if you feel just miserable, you can't think beyond what you feel. And that visualization stops right at the brainstem and never makes it into your body. Unless you practice the art of gratitude. So back to what Krishna said to Brahma. And there's no audible verbal dialogue, because Krishna was standing there, Gopal looking at Brahma with his crowns, Gopal's feet, praying, tears flowing from his eyes, drenching the earth. And all Krishna, Gopal could think is, Who is this four-headed personality, and where has he come from, and what is he talking about? I don't understand any of this. I just want to find my friends. But yet there was some inner internal dialogue. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur reveals. Krishna told Rama, the normal people are grateful when they receive a gift they find meaningful or valuable. I'm different because I'm grateful in return for offerings that my devotees will make in the future, and I reciprocate with them in advance. Now that's a dynamic you can activate just by practicing your own gratitude and observing Krishna's reciprocation. Gratitude opens, it softens, it nourishes the heart. To create the fertile kind of soil where the Bhakti Lata Bija can take root and grow to fruition. In the highest spiritual sentiments, bhava, prema. Because even the higher material sentiments in the world of duality, they have their downside. Not so with spiritual sentiments. And grace evoked by invoked by Mother Jishu's efforts. The grace of Krishna, our own endeavor. Those two fingers, which the rope was too short, by the grace of Krishna and our own endeavor, the rope grows sufficiently long to bind Krishna in our hearts. So to devotees who properly honor Kartik Mas, Krishna, out of gratitude, gives his very self. Whereas to those who are negligent in Kartik, they'll be neglected by Krishna. And what can we look forward to at the conclusion of this month, on the last day? The appearance of Tulsi Day, the arrival of Lord Chaitanya and Vrindavan, and the wonderful parikrama he took with the Sinodhya Brahman, the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, after their wonderful discussion. On the ecstatic love which is possible only by some connection with Madhavendra Puri, and that is our sampradaya. After that discussion, they went on parikrama, and we're following to this day in those lotus footprints. This is the day that Krishna returned to Vrindavan from Mathura. Just after visiting Kupta, who is Bhumi, bent over like a hunchback due to that overburden of pseudo-chakra, those militant kings posing as a royal order, simply creating a burden on Mother Earth. Bhumi took the form of Kuja, and Krishna relieved her of that burden. And as soon as he returned to his palace, after visiting Kunja, Krishna heard flapping wings, large wings, and he was wondering, is this Garuda? And he looked out at the perch he had outside his window for his peacock. And this magnificent swan landed, glistening in the midday sun. And the swan was looking at Krishna from his lotus feet up to his lotus eyes, examining him carefully. Because he wanted to see, is this the person to whom I'm supposed to deliver the message? Hansadira. And Krishna was looking at the swan. Who is this? Is this some celestial omen? Some kind of messenger? So they're looking at each other. And the swan concluded that this is the one I've been sent to. So he folded his wings. And now all this time, Uddhava was with Krishna. And after the visit with Kunja, Uddhava didn't say anything. But his pleading eyes kept asking Krishna, when will you return to Vrindavan? You sent me there. I promised the Vrindavasis I would bring you back. You promised me you'd go. When will that day come? And Krishna knew it had to be soon, because Kamsa's widows, who were the daughters of Jarasandha, had returned to their father, who was so incensed, because according to their version of the wrestling arena, Kamsa was just innocently watching. An innocent wrestling match. But Kamsa's wrestlers were not like gopas. There was nothing innocent about it, but that was their version to Jarasandha. He was so outraged, he vowed to exterminate the Jatis. And to Krishna and the others in Mathura, the reports were coming from the east, confirming that he was acting on his word and was amassing a vast army, and Krishna knew he'd do it 17 times over, each one larger than the previous. And he would have to relocate to Dwarka. If he did so, the Vrijavasis would feel so neglected that they would perish. So, Uddhava is pleading with anxious eyes, not saying anything. Krishna was thinking, yes, I have to go. So here's this swan on the perch outside his window. And Krishna is standing at his table, which is covered with letters blurred by his tears. Very eager to hear what the messenger had to say. So he introduced himself, I'm a messenger from the foremost friend of the princess of Braj. Now don't fault her for talking to a bird, and who else could she reveal her heart to? Do you remember? She has her own calf. the Vasanti vine you married to a mango tree. The incessant weep honey, and that makes us cry. To remember, Krishna, those two syllables, Radha, and Krishna said, what's she getting at? This is, Lalita marrying the preface of her message as a prelude to Radha's letter being delivered by Hansa Vidit. To remember those two syllables, Radha and Krishna. What's she getting at? I live by remembrance of those syllables. And then Hansa Vidit quoted Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I guess you should say it the other way around. That verse is there at CC. Simply by dancing in the circle of the Rasa Lila, you awaken Radha's love. Why then are you acting so indifferent towards her? She's lying on the ground before me, unconscious. I don't know if she's still alive. I'll test her breath with a cotton swab, and if she's still alive, I'll chastise her. It's pretty harsh. So then Hansa Vidit had to wait for Krishna to stop crying over his table of smudged letters that he could never send. And now he understood why he had not received any letters from Vrindavan. And the swan's words transported Krishna to Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is a lotus. It blossoms in the light of Krishna's love, and it closes when he lives. So in the absence of Krishna when he was in Mathura, Vrindavan became a veritable wasteland. And as he approached, because at the end of the conclusion of the swan, he told them that we're going. So they mounted the chariot, and they rode fast for Vrindavan. As they approached, the lotus of Vrindavan again blossomed. As to the hearts of every living entity within Vrindavan, blossomed is a pleasure paradise. And then when the cows were the first to see a chariot with two cloud-like figures moving across the ridge, and they're watching. And when the breeze changed direction and the fragrance of Krishna's lotus form entered the nostrils of the cows, they went wild and into what you would call, for those who don't know the terminology, a stampede. And the gopis at first were so upset. They totally lost control of Nanda Maharaj's cows. But then when they saw that they're all running in the same direction, straight toward this chariot, the gopis looked. Did they dare to hope that Krishna finally fulfilled his promise? So the cows surrounded the chariot like an ocean. 900,000 cows closing in on the chariot as it rocks back and forth. Krishna descended and expanded himself to a form to be at the side of every cow, and he asked each one individually as if a question was meant for her alone. Oh mother, did you miss me as much as I missed you? And collectively, they all said, Now, Uddhava was Krishna's chariot driver. But he had to turn the chariot over to Krishna. How do you navigate through this ocean of cows? So Krishna's driving the chariot, and the cows were moving apace, and Krishna had one object in sight. It's the dark complexion Gopa, who wore a yellow dhoti and a red turban. Krishna directed the chariot directly to Sridhara. But Sridhara was stunned. He couldn't respond. He couldn't even believe what he's seeing and hearing. Krishna jumped off the chariot, clasped him by the shoulders, and his surge of ecstasy he felt indicated that this must be my Gopal return, but he still couldn't believe it. Krishna had to clasp him to his chest. And then Sridhara felt his heart beating in rhythm with Krishna. And then Krishna, again, held him out far enough he could see him. Sridhara began dancing, chanting this new mantra. Gopal has returned, Gopal has returned, Gopal has returned to Vrindavan. And all the gopas burst into spontaneous sankirtan, chanting that mantra as they played on their flutes and buffalo horns. And they praised Uddhava as a true hero, because true to his word, he brought Govinda back. So the sound of the sankirtan reached Nandagram, where Nanda and Yashoda were waiting with pounding hearts, and the caravan of cows and gopas, and Uddhava with Krishna reached the palace gates. And stunned in ecstasy, Nanda and Yashoda were unable to what they considered properly greet their Gopal, until he fell at their feet and bathed them with his tears, in response to which Mother Yashoda picked up Krishna, kissed him and bathed him with her tears and milk. And when Krishna came before Nanda Maharaj, Nanda, like Sridhara, had to keep embracing him tight to his chest and then holding him out where he could see, and then clasping him again until he finally believed. And he cried out, "Krishna, Krishna." And everyone felt Krishna's embrace simultaneously as he expanded to be at the side of every Vrijavasi. At this time, Srimati Radharani, as described by Hansaduda, was lying in the sand on shore of Jamuna. She had sent a message sometime previous to be delivered by the wind. "O Yadunath, when will my friends come running from all directions to tell me that you've returned?" And that day was today. And all her friends came running from all directions to tell her, "He's back." She had everything ready. Her most beautiful sari and ornaments, sakis and manjaris, pressed her as fast as they could to still meet their standard of perfection. And then when they were done, she jumped up to meet Lolita's hand restraining her. Don't run to him after what he's done. It is befitting that he come to you. And she pleaded with so many glances, but Lolita was adamant. Her ambassador of loving affairs. Restraining her until Krishna came before her and she smiled for the first time since Krishna had left with her, bringing so much joy to her friends. And she asked him, why did you stay away for so long? And the only response was a soft patter of Krishna's tears falling at her feet. He was speechless. He could not respond. Finally, when he composed himself, he repeated the message that he had previously sent with Uddhava. Separation from me is impossible at any time or any place or under any circumstance because I am all-pervading. I've separated myself from you just to increase your superexcellent love. Being unable to repay you, let your own glorious deeds be your only compensation. That was not the response she wanted to hear about the super soul. Plus, it kindled a fear. Is he going to leave again? Why is he talking about super soul? He was not to her liking. So then he changed his strategy. He said, love has no existence on its own. It requires an object and a subject. I am the supreme object. You are the supreme subject. And it will always be so. That was a more appealing subject. But they didn't come together simply to talk. They came together too, because by now the Sharad Purnima moon is rising, and now it was time to dance beneath that if you say Kartik moon, you have to discern that it's not Kartik Purnima, which is the last day of Kartik. This is Sharad Purnima, although Kartik has begun. So beneath the beautiful Kartik sky, they danced. And the gopis proved themselves as milkmaids in the truest sense of the term, because they note the essence of love from Sri Krishna and churned it and distributed it. They had Rasalila every night with similar patterns. Krishna would leave with Radha, he would leave her, the gopis would find her, they'd be reunited in an increasingly common mood. At the end of the month, there was a different sequence. Krishna left with Radha. And they were so exhilarated by the Rasalila that they walked and they walked and they walked. 4 yojanas from Govardhan to a mountain named Rohit. It was very fragrant because of the predominance of sandalwood trees. And a beautiful lake named Davis Larova, surrounded by all kinds of flowering trees and covered with fragrant lotuses and cool with gentle breezes. And they sat on a rock, joking, until Robin saw on the far side of the lake a sage standing on one leg. And she asked, "Who's that?" And Krishna said, "That's Rudra Muni. He's been performing tapasya for 66,000 years, not eating or drinking." And he didn't even see that Radha and Krishna were not right before him, but just right across the lake. So Krishna called him Rudra Muni, but he was unresponsive because he was having darshan of Krishna within his heart. So he didn't realize that Krishna is just on the other side of the lake with Radha. So he didn't answer the call. So Krishna withdrew himself from his heart. And then confused, he opened his eyes and saw before him Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. He came before them, offered his prayers and worship, circumambulated them. Now, he was a devotee of Krishna who worshipped Radha as Krishna's beloved, which is different from the gopis and their followers, who are mainly devoted to Radha for the sake of assisting her in bringing Krishna the supreme pleasure. So Krishna embraced Rudra Muni, and he attained Swarup City in a chariot descended from Goloka, brightening the atmosphere as it took his renewed form back to Godhead. And the body he left behind melted into a river that flowed down the slopes of Mount Rohit. And Radha asked Krishna, why did he turn into a river? And he said that his affection for me transformed his body into the embodiment of prana, which now flows like a river to glorify bhakti. And then in the morning when the sun mercilessly rose into the sky, Mother Yashoda searched the palace. Nanda Maharaj searched Nandagram. The gopis searched the pasturing grounds, and Krishna was nowhere to be seen. For the whole month of Kartik, they were so charmed by his presence that they forgot that he'd ever left Kulakumara. If anyone ever mentioned it throughout that month, don't go there. Don't bring up Kulakumara. That was just a bad dream. Don't even think about it. Krishna narrowly forgot. But now they can't find him. Did Krishna again leave? Was it a dream? Did he ever come back? Was it a dream? Would they wake up to find out that he's still there and that it was a dream? They lived in such a state. And yet they lived by the hope that Krishna would return. Because hope is inseparable from Krishna consciousness. And Krishna also lived on by hope that he would return. Even though he never left. He remained ever present in the thoughts of the Brijavasis, whether they considered their darshans to be hallucinations or dreams, which included his coming and going. Krishna also lived on, sustained by the love the Brijavasis lavish upon him in their thoughts and their dreams, until the day that he would return again to play with the gopas, to tend the cows, to serve his parents, to dance in the forest. Such is the way of life in Vrindavan. Such is the way of love. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes. Question.
Thank you so much for taking us to the spiritual world. In the brief on Bhagavatamrita at the end, where Krishna is there in Vrindavan interacting with his friends and his relatives and the Nanda-yashoda, if I remember right, the descriptions were that these pastimes occur seemingly every day. The activities that we hear about in Krishna book, the killing of Kamsa, the Krishna leaving to go to the Torah, coming back again, sounded very much like what I had heard in reading Bhagavatamrita, some of the things that you were saying. And I was wondering, could you tell us where you were getting some of these beautiful stories from? Were they inspired by Riga Bhagavatamrita, or?
Some of them are from Riga Bhagavatamrita. Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Commentaries of Srila Vishnu, Garga Samhita, Padavali. Krishna's return to Vrindavan is mainly Gopal Champa by Jiva Goswami. So, Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes the past times in Golok, which are similar to the pastimes in Gokul, with some significant differences. And there's an eternal relationship between the spiritual and material world. And there's an interaction between the two that actually carries messages back and forth, and sometimes back and forth. Because there's one pastime that can't take place in Golok, it's Krishna's appearance. Krishna's always there. He can't appear there. He appears in Gokul. So in Golok, there's a sentiment that Krishna is born. But where does the sentiment really come from? It comes from Gokul, here on earth. And in Golok, yes, the same demons that come to Gokul, or Vrindavan, or Nandagarh, or wherever Krishna is at the time, the same demons appear in Golok, but there's a difference. On the earth, when Krishna kills the demons, they're mainly envious souls who became rakshasas and kamsas, planned to take over the universe. He recruited so many rakshasas, and by defeating them, they submitted to him, and then he sent them to Vrindavan. So they're envious souls. The same pastimes appear in Golok, but there's no envious souls in Golok. So for the pastimes to unfold, it's the same thing the gopis did when Krishna left the Rasa Lila. They went mad. And they began enacting his pastimes. You know, one gopi became Buddha, and then another gopi became Krishna, and he liberated her. And one gopi became Trinavarta, and carried another gopi up into the air. In their madness, they're enacting all the pastimes of the demons. But there's no envious souls involved. These are workings of yoga maya that just forever enhance Krishna's lila. And even though they go through it every day, the next time the demon arrives in the book, they forget that it ever happened unlimited times before. And they're not redundant. There's, you know, variations in the details. And, you know, Brihad Bhagavatam is subduing Kaliya. But Kaliya didn't get banished to the sea. He stayed in Vrindavan, which he couldn't do in Bhagavatam because he offended too many Vrindavasis and he couldn't stay in Vrindavan. Krishna banished him to the sea. In Kaliya Lila and Golok, Kaliya doesn't get banished. When Krishna's dancing on his hoods, he extends his hand because the gopis are on the shore watching, and Kaliya lowers his hood. The gopis get on it, the hood rises up, and they have Rasa Lila. From one hood to another, as the various hoods are rising and falling, and Kaliya is floating across the Jumna like a luxury liner. So the same pastimes happen in Golok, but there's some marked differences. Certain similarities, certain differences. The main thing is that there's no demons in Golok. There's no envious souls. So the pastime of Krishna subduing the demons, there's no demons. It's workings of the of yoga maya. It just enhances the wonder, beauty, sweetness, charm, and adventure of life in Golok. Anything else?
This morning, I was thinking. I was thinking there's a debated part of the Holy Bible when Jesus is on the cross right before he gives up his spirit. He says, "Father, why have you forsaken me?" Is that an example, maybe, of Krishna leaving his glory to increase his desire to finish his service? Or,
okay.
It is finished. What does that mean? It means his mission is completed and fulfilled.
It just kind of made sense to me this morning, like that part that I wondered about my whole life.
Yes, that's it. It's an instance of the mantra is an affirmation to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, being the epitome of renunciation. That is the sannyasi's objective. Srila Prabhupada is very emphatic that we not imitate. And even as far as Rasa-lila, some people like to imitate Rasa-lila, to which Srila Prabhupada answers, first you have to lift Govardhan Hill with the little finger of your left hand on the liver or leg, and then you can think about Rasa-lila. The thing is, we're talking today about sankalpa, intent. Intentions direct the journey of life. But it has to be aligned with the goal. The intention is your starting point, the goal is your final point. And the integrity of the alignment determines the effectiveness of your journey. When we hear about exalted souls, Their activities are not to be imitated. Their footsteps are to be followed as a practice, as a sadhana, as a goal to align with our sadhana. Sadhana is practice, sadhana. If it's not aligned with the final goal, we'll meander all over the place. So that's the goal, that's the ultimate goal. And there again, the love of Vrindavan is not for all souls. There's Ayodhya. There's, first of all, there's Mathura, there's Dwarka, there's Ayodhya, there's Vaikuntha. Vrindavan is an exclusive goal. And yet, it's Mahaprabhu's goal and that of his followers. Whatever devotees of whatever avatar Lord Chaitanya incorporated in his entourage, devotees of Ram, Mahārāya-gupta, the prominent, devotees of Nishina, Varaha. I mean, the Panchatattva, the Dvaita Chandra, he's Karnadaksha Vishnu. By the influence of Mahāprabhu, the Dvaita Chandra, Karnadaksha Vishnu, in Sankirtan, is dancing with the emotions and gestures of a gopi. He didn't become a gopi. Ram Das Vishwas did not discontinue his loving devotion to Lord Ram. But it was enhanced by Mahaprabhu's influence. So when we hear such extreme renunciation, it's not to imitate, as Dita Guru is appropriately bringing up. That would lead to chaos, irresponsibility, and sadhya, to which Srila Prabhupada had a very ecstatic response, reserved for sadhyas. And Mayavadis, they're closer to it. What's the response? I kick their heads with my boots. You may wonder, what kind of sadhu would say such a thing? Goal. But it's important to be honest and humble about where we really are on the path and not imitate the state beyond our realization, which will simply lead to chaos in both our own spiritual lives and in society. So no, the Brijabhasa's love is not to be imitated. The renunciation of the gopis, which is so extreme, is not for imitation. It's for holding high, high above our heads and worshiping with the utmost honor and yearning. When, oh, when will that day arrive? Don't imitate. Simply creates chaos. Thank you for that very important point.
Said Maharaj that the heart is like a lotus. Did you say that's looking our hearts are shaped?
Our spiritual hearts.
Our spiritual hearts.
The heart of the pure devotee is a replica for God. Vrindavan is a lotus. It blossoms or contracts according to Krishna's desire. Of course, it's different in a conditioned soul. And the heart blossoms or contracts in response to our consciousness. The very practical point is that the heart opens with a spirit of gratitude and closes when that sentiment is waning. So if you want to open your heart, and you know we say it about during kirtan, chant with all your heart. It's not simply a matter of giving more emotion. It's a matter of feeling and expressing the emotions that exist inside, internally. And how are they released? How are they awakened? The other way to appreciate chanting with your heart is the mantra has to be used for parampara. The syllables of the holy name are available anywhere, everywhere. They have no potency if not delivered through parampara. And the analogy the acharyas use is a gun which can fire either bullets or blanks. By the sound, you can't tell the difference. By the effect, you can. The holy name descends from the Loka Vrindavan, seeking out a heart who is open to receive him. When the heart is open and the spirit is humble, the holy name has access to descend into the core of our heart, where it awakens our sleeping soul. And when your soul awakens, then you chant with spiritual senses. You hear with spiritual senses. You serve with spiritual senses. How to open the heart. Gratitude. Emphasize that point in a most unconventional way, right here in Vrindavan. Does everybody know what darshan I'm talking about? I don't know. I don't know.
Here's a question. Do you have a question?
That's a nice thing he's going to talk. It was a lot of fun. Sankirtan Prabhu's house on the lawn. Where Srila Prabhupada would give darshan every afternoon. And it was such a pleasing, charming, sweet setting. The devotees asking questions. Srila Prabhupada answered. Then our God Brother Taro. He asked Srila Prabhupada, "What do we do?" Meaning, I don't know what to do. And I try to preach to these local farmers about taking up bhakti, and they say, "I have no time." Because we're farmers. It takes up all your time. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we respond? So Srila Prabhupada was sitting there very peacefully on the Vyasa side, stroking, petting the lions. Oh, the lions. Very peaceful. Krishna Maharaj was standing there with a peacock fan on one side, just Duna Maharaj with a chamar on the other. Very sweet, charming, peaceful setting. So the question, how do you preach to these farmers? So Srila Prabhupada deferred it to Prishna Krishna Maharaj, who said, according to Bhagavad Gita, and then Srila Prabhupada got animated. He went like this. Stop. Don't bring in Bhagavad Gita. And this is something new. And it really got the devotee's attention. Because his then was, you always have to support whatever you say with Bhagavad Gita. Or Srila Prabhupada. Don't bring it. Bhagavad Gita, and then animated like this, stop. And he really got the devotee's attention. So he turned to Drishtadyumna Maharaj. How would you answer that? So he got a little creative. He said, Krishna says, he did the same thing. Don't bring in Krishna. He got his hand like this in front of him to stop him. Now the devotees are really attentive. Can't bring in Bhagavad Gita. Can't bring in Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada had to answer the question himself. Now, this is one of those times when he's becoming very animated. So I have to move this. Because he leaned over like this. To put it in the vernacular, he got right in Taru's face. Not actually addressing Taru, but the imaginary farmers he was representing to the public. Chastised, rascal! Can you make it rain? Can you make the sun shine? You're so dependent on Krishna at every step. Offer a little gratitude. And then that was it. We let it go and he's back to his sweet, normal, peaceful self. And he made a really important point. And over the years, in reflecting on that darshan, reflecting on the importance of that message, and then aligning it with what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur reveals about Krishna's gratitude. Most people are grateful when they receive a gift they consider meaningful or valuable. I'm different. I'm grateful for gifts my devotees will offer me in the future, and I reciprocate in advance. If we're grateful and align with Krishna's gratitude, then that far-fetched goal of love of God and the ecstasy of devotional service, which seems so unreachable at times, especially when we're feeling really miserable, and you know you're supposed to be blissful, and you find that you can't think beyond what you feel, so So you're thinking blissful, you're feeling miserable, you're stuck in that dichotomy. How do you overcome? The heart of gratitude draws future possibilities into the present moment, which is the only place where life and transformation actually exists, in the present. How much of our time in consciousness is lost between being stuck in past hurts, which we project into future fears, and back and forth like a ping-pong ball, we never touch down in the present moment to experience the joys and the love and the opportunities for transformation here and now. The key is gratitude. It opens the heart to the higher self that's within, and the words and experience. Gratitude is the ultimate state of receptivity. It makes the heart most fertile and soft, so the Bhagavata Bija can put down roots and grow to fruition to deliver fruits and flowers of bhava and prema. Anything else? Yes.
I want to know if you'll be coming and speaking more than you generally do during this wonderful month.
Yes, thank you. Time to rush to come. It's about time.
7:45.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chi Chi. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.